It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley. Lots to talk about. Just shipped a new version of Windows Redstone 4 for the insiders. You'll be interested in the things they've taken out of Windows. We'll talk about the future of AR, VR, and mixed reality. And Sea of Thieves, something, something, blah, blah, blah. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 554, recorded Wednesday, January 24th, 2018. Everyday Magic. Windows Weekly is brought to you by TurboTax Live. New from TurboTax, now you can get a personal review of your tax return with a CPA or EA right on your screen. Talk live with a tax expert as often as you need for tax advice to help you file with confidence. Go to TurboTaxLive.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly. Way, 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 way overtime for Windows Weekly. We cannot wait to find out what's going on in the exciting environs of Redmond, Washington. Joining us now, far, far away from Redmond, Washington, a couple of East Coasters, Mary Jo Foley. She's in Manhattan, the Big Apple. She writes about Microsoft from a distance, all about Microsoft, although she's been known to fly to Seattle once or twice.
We are basically as far from Redmond as you can get and still be in the continental United States.
Yeah. At least I built TWiT at the most northernmost tip of Silicon Valley.
Right. No, but these are like the eastern suburbs of Redmond.
Paul Thurrott's in Emmaus, PA, the heart of the Lower Macungie Valley, where he is writing at Thurrott.com and publishing books at leanpub.com. Hello there. Welcome back.
Hello. Hello, Leo.
Or maybe it is you who should welcome me back. I'm just a figment of your imagination.
That's amazing that you say that, because I visited Boston last week and I told a friend of mine that I don't feel like that kid who hangs around in front of the high school he's already graduated from. I feel like I'm a ghost and I am now haunting you, you know?
I saw your pictures and I thought, what am I traveling in time? It said denim.
It felt unnatural.
What were you doing there?
Just haunting my friends. We had kind of a get together that was planned months ago, but then the football playoffs obviously were happening. Ooh. So I decided to stay an extra day.
And Foxborough.
Enjoy that.
Did you sit outside the stadium in Foxborough?
No, I don't know if you are aware of how weather works, but in January in Boston, it's not
Jenny,
great.
It's a little chilly.
It's not great.
Jenny.
Yeah.
Foxborough is so far south in Massachusetts, it's practically Rhode Island.
Wow. So far east in Massachusetts, it's practically the Atlantic Ocean.
It's practically in the ocean.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I guess, are you a Pats fan?
Yeah, isn't everybody?
No. The world, can I tell you, Paul? The world hates the Patriots.
Yeah, that's what winning does.
Yeah, they're rapidly becoming one of the most hated teams in the
Yeah, well, I celebrate that. And
Cheaters! Yeah.
To the rest of the world, I just have a message, which is screw you guys.
They don't need to.
I'm sorry, you're such losers.
They put their win in.
I even watched the game on Sunday. Well,
it was on in Rattle and Hum.
No, Sirachi loves football, I found out.
I figured out how to get an intruder in her midst.
I was looking at two channels one night, and I had football come on, and he ran over to the TV and was like attentive. So I'm like, oh, maybe his former owner liked football. So Sunday, he wanted to watch the game. So
literally was like, he
was rooting for the Jags, though, because he kept saying big cats unite.
That
didn't work. All the animal based teams don't ever really come through in the end.
Eagles.
Sorry.
Eagles are animals. Eagles.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting. So Sirachi did not come to you as a kitten.
No. Sirachi, he had owners before me.
He was full grown. And so he may have habits that you don't even know about.
Including a love of football.
A love of
football.
Yeah. It was really weird because, I mean, no other TV except for animal shows he likes, but football, maybe it's because football players are animals. I don't know.
Yeah.
So in all the years I've had cats, I can only point to maybe two occasions where something was happening on the screen where my cats were like, hey, what's that? And they were both animal shows.
Isn't
like
that
some, it was some animal thing and they actually paid attention to it and walked up to the screen and kind of touched the screen or whatever. But that, yeah, that didn't happen regularly.
Our cat, we have one cat that likes House of Cards. I'm not kidding.
We'll doesn't like Narcos.
No, Narcos is not into it. But he will sit in front of the screen. He will actually jump up and sit in front of the screen. So much of House of Cards I watched with a silhouette of a cat
right
in front of the screen. Hmm.
You're confused when it's not there.
Yeah. Where's the cat?
Oh, they replaced him with Christopher Plummer, actually.
nice. do we want to talk about Microsoft today?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. Now, for some reason, this Mary Jo Foley lead, what's next for Windows, reminds me a lot of that Paul Rand poster I have in the other office of with the Next logo on it. What's going on there? Right.
That inexpensive logo.
The one Steve Jobs said. Rand said to him, I'll make it, but you have to accept it sight unseen. No, yep.
He
no
complained
changes.
About the yellow, and he said, sorry, I'm the expert. That's the yellow.
That's it.
That's a good story.
Yeah, so we'll give you a little teaser on why I spelled next with capital N, capital E, lowercase x, and capital T. There is a reason.
Yep.
So there's a team in Windows called Windows Next.
Yeah.
And the next in that name stands for Next Generation Experiences. So we're going to talk about that. That's like the longer term future of Windows. But first, let's talk about the nearer term future of Windows, because we've had a couple things happen.
This, it turns out, I just noticed, is actually worth thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's like a collector's item, isn't it?
Signed by Paul Rand.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was so poorly treated by some guy named Leo. It's got coffee stains on it and...
Yep. Would you eat like breakfast on it or something? What's?
But it's assigned. Let me just look.
Yeah, no, that's.
I bet it's worth a lot of money.
It was given to
me. Also, just like Windows 10S for education.
Yeah.
How'd that work out?
So this new typography you're celebrating here, what does it mean? What does it mean?
You know, I think the reason they some people write it that way is because it stands for Next Generation Experiences. So the EX is the experience. Thing. So N and T next. I don't know. I'm making it up, but there is a reason they do it that way. And this org within Windows is in the news this week, but we're not going to say right away why it is. We're going to talk near term first.
Okay.
Okay.
Because right before the show started, like just 1 hour before, we just got a new build of Windows 10 Redstone 4.
Oh. Well,
just came out.
Now it's just crazy, going crazy.
Yeah. So you know what's funny about this build? It's 17083. And I thought by now we are kind of be slowing down on the features because they're going to RTM fairly soon if they expect to be, you know, the March, April timeframe to get this out. But no, this build has a ton of new features that came out today. It has... some new things for timeline, and we found out as of this build today that sets definitely will not be in Redstone 4. It was kind of a question mark up till now, but it's out. Yeah. Sets is
no
out. I'm not surprised. Not
it
that
was
many
actually
people
pretty
were
terrible.
Testing it, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't very good.
Yeah, that's what one guy said in my Twitter timeline. He's like, I'm glad they cut it. It's terrible.
Yeah, so. It looks terrible. It only worked with some apps. It was not good.
Right, so Sets is that thing that's like groupy. It lets you manage windows in a way to group them together.
Mm-hmm.
But that feature is not in. Yeah, not in. But what is in is a new diagnostic tool for looking at at least some of the telemetry data that Microsoft is collecting from you as a Windows 10 user. They have this new utility called the Diagnostic Data Viewer that's in this build. And they have that fonts page that I think Paul talked about that last week, or Raphael.
Yeah,
found
Raphael,
that
Raphael had written about it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
He that's
found
in
it
there.
In the previous build.
Yep. So that's there. You know, it's not a ton of like huge barn burner features, but there are a lot of things still going on. Oh, and one kind of odd one, they renamed quiet hours in this build yeah. to focus assist.
Oh, jeez. It's like something, what is it, like a gun sight? What are you talking about? Like, what,
I don't know. Quiet
what a
hours
terrible
is
name.
Weird too, though. Anything
I know.
Would be better than quiet hours. Don't you think?
What they're trying to emphasize is what this
focus.
Feature does is
you're
let
working.
You
focus.
Yeah. Like focus on something, like yeah. concentrate your attention and not be interrupted. Right. So
I don't know.
I think they should call it concentration. That's what I joked on Twitter. I'm like, what?
Well, okay. But every mobile
just
OS
do not
has
disturb.
A mode like
how about
do not
that?
Disturb.
Yeah. That's what it's called yeah. everywhere yeah, else.
Just, yeah.
Do not disturb.
Yeah, this is like we don't want to copy the Mac trash cans. We're
right.
going to call it a recycle
bin.
You know, it's like, okay, but
that was a
who has
idea.
A recycle? But what is that?
Yeah. 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 That's a very Seattle thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah. There are a lot of new assistive technologies in today's build and tweaks to that. And there's a huge list of known issues. You know, for a while they stopped publishing known issues. Well, if you want to yep. see the known issues, there's a lot of them in this build.
Yeah, like Skype doesn't work. So actually, you might want to install it just for that.
I was going to say, is that an issue or know, a feature?
That's what Rich was saying. How come that's not listed under the features?
We broke Skype.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we're getting closer. Now we're going to start saying that like we do every time when we get closer to a new feature release. But they're starting to close in on what the feature set's going to be for this thing. We still don't know what the name of it is, right? Still no leaks on that or anything.
I'm thinking
on
by
that
this
name.
Point, it doesn't have a name, right? I mean, aren't we just going
to
call
it
Redstone 4?
Are we going to call it 1803?
The OS has no name.
Well, I mean, look, knowing Microsoft, they're going to, you know, they love this creators term. They keep using it. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised they didn't just say it's the spring creators update or whatever. But, you know, they're running into the issue where they're going to have redundant names or something. So I don't know.
Right.
What the plan is. But honestly, I've always liked the version number name. You know, the 1709 or 1803 makes plenty of sense.
Unambiguous?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's good.
Right.
Like
very
it.
Specific. It's yeah. very, it works. You know, but,
I do actually yeah. like that.
Yeah.
I vote that.
I do too.
Yeah.
Not that they're listening.
No.
Yeah, I know. They don't care what we want.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, they listen. They just ignore.
Yeah. Chris Cappicella listens.
He does.
Yeah. But I see. I have this vision of Chris going into the, you know, the executive committee meetings. And they go, not again, Chris. Not with the Windows Weekly crap. Come on.
Right, right.
No one cares.
Here's how they were slagging us this week.
I got this great idea from Paul and Mary Jo. Shut up. Shut it. Shut up.
Yeah.
Zip it.
Oh, and in that context, we are like the Grimer worm tongue of Microsoft, you know, like whispering in the ear
yep.
our evil thoughts.
We have some ideas for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but okay. I actually want to hear a little more from Paul on this telemetry tool thing that's in here, this diagnostic data viewer, because I didn't get briefed on this. I think you did, right?
I didn't either. No, I didn't.
Oh.
But but my take on this is that Microsoft is never going to stop adjusting the privacy controls in Windows 10. I think this is going to be a regular thing that we'll see in each version. This is designed to meet the regulatory needs of somebody. It may be France. It may be the EU in general. I think it's France. But
yeah,
I don't quite understand. You know, it's almost like six releases into Windows 10, we're going to get to where it should have been in the first place, you know?
Yeah.
I just think they keep getting regulatory pushback, in particular in Europe.
Yeah.
So that's all. This is just theater. It's Microsoft doing as little as possible in each release to kind of meet the needs and then seeing if it works. And when it doesn't,
right.
you know, 1809 will come out and that will have more. And,
yeah. Yeah. So what this does is it shows you in some form, like what the data is that's going to Microsoft. So you see like the OS version number and things like that, right?
Sure. I don't know what people think this is going to look like, right? It's going to be a log file type thing. It's not going to say, oh my, you're never going to believe what Paul just did. He was browsing the web, and then he went to this porn site, and then he went to this, you know, malware site. You know, like it's not.
It's not going to be like that. Yeah. No, it's
not gonna be like that. In particular, if you follow what I do, because it's.
It's going to be Call of Duty.
He stopped. He hasn't used the computer in 6 hours, but looks like his gamer score has gone up somehow.
I saw some pictures of the kinds of data, and it was like JSON files, right? It was like it doesn't.
Yeah, it's going to be an XML type thing, and
yeah,
it's going to be terrible.
And I guess there's also going to be a way if you have a Cortana power speaker to listen to the things that it collected that you said to it.
That would be amazing. So you can listen to all the stupid stuff you said to it.
I know. Right.
Most of mine would just be like the rantings of a crazy person.
Shut up.
Why do you keep talking?
Yeah. So anyway, that's in there.
There you go.
There you go.
There I go.
I know. It's like, it's not a ton of exciting features, but there's still new features. So that's good. Timeline, it's good. Timeline looks like it's definitely going to make it into Redstone 4. I mean, they're continuing to tweak Timeline. Yeah. There's still builds of stuff in Timeline.
Although, you know, the question there is always going to be around the third-party app support and what's there. I mean, for the people who are using Microsoft Office and Microsoft Edge, you're probably, you know, going to be looking pretty good. I don't think they've ever mentioned anybody by name, you know, Adobe supporting it, whoever else. I mean, I don't know. Maybe
you mean for set? Do you mean for sets there more?
No, for Timeline, right? In other words,
what do you mean?
You have some history of working in, say, Photoshop or something. You could go back to that. I believe it has. I believe they have to explicitly support it for that to even show up. I think that was the issue why I didn't make the previous release.
Okay. Yeah. And with this build, they said they're making it easier to delete activities in your timeline, which is good because sometimes you don't want everything that you were doing to show up in your timeline, probably.
Yeah, for sure.
And then also they're making it so Timeline will sync your activities to the cloud. So if you are doing the pickup where you left off thing, it'll be able to continue and you'll be able to see those activities up to a certain point in time back across devices. So that's new, right. I guess, in this build. Yeah. So I think that's all we have on that one.
Yeah, it's just not exciting, is it?
I know.
But that's fine. It's fine. That's where it should be.
It's actually okay.
Right?
Yeah. I know. Yeah, operating systems that do a lot of mundane things, and you just need them to do those well.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right.
Get out of the way.
I know.
Yeah. Just get out of the way.
But then I see a 10S item on here, Mr. Thurrott, yet again.
Actually, I think this will be more interesting than you think it is.
Okay.
I've wasted about 48 hours now trying to restore the Surface laptop back to its stock Windows 10 image so that I can then upgrade it to the Insider Preview build. So I haven't tried this new build yet, but I've had a variety of problems doing that. It's a convoluted, not convoluted, it's a time-consuming process. If you own a Surface device, you probably know you can go to the Surface support website, download a restore image. You create a recovery disk on USB, copy over the files, reboot the computer, goes back to its factory image. In the case of Surface Laptop, which I'm now on the fourth install of, by the way, it goes back to Windows 10 1703, which is, you know, of course, the version that shipped almost a year ago.
Why?
Sorry, my dog just walked in my office and bumped her head into the door because she's brain damaged. Why does it? Yeah, I don't know.
Why does it go to 1703?
Yeah, why does it? I don't know. So with most Surface devices over time, they'll upgrade that restore image and give you the choice. So I should be able to choose 1709 now. It's been out for several months. You may recall it's fully deployed or whatever.
Yes, fully deployable.
Yeah,
so,
but yet it's not there. But, you know, whatever. It's okay because anyone who has done this a lot understands that if you were to install Windows 10 1703 today on any computer, you should be able to go to Windows Update and get just a couple of updates. One of them will be 1709. There'll be firmware updates on a Surface Book. And then you'll get like a cumulative update that will bring it up to date to the most recent month for January 2018. That, and it might be a couple of other small things, but that's pretty much what you should be looking at. With this particular device, I'm getting a particular error message. It won't go past 1703. In fact, it won't even install the latest cumulative update for 1703. And so I went to the Windows 10 download site, and this is kind of, you can consider this an intellectual activity or whatever, or an intellectual exercise. There are two tools you can download from this website. This is a Microsoft website. One is called the Update Advisor. And what that does is it upgrades your computer to the latest version of Windows 10. So if you're running Windows 10 version 1703, you should be able to run this tool and get to 1709. The Update Advisor is a desktop application. It does not run on Windows 10S. Okay. So the other tool is called the Media Creation Tool. This tool allows you to create a bootable USB media or a DVD bootable setup media. Or you can use it to download the ISO file. That utility is also a Win32 desktop application, and it will not run on Windows 10S. So I'm kind of stuck here, right? You get the situation where I have a legitimate version of Windows. It's activated. It won't go to the latest version of Windows 10. There's not much I can do about it. For the heck of it, I decided to download the ISO on my desktop computer, which, of course, is running Pro, and I copied it over to the Surface laptop, which is running S. Now, setup.exe in that ISO is a Win32 desktop application. Well, guess what? That runs. Microsoft doesn't give you a way to acquire it from the OS, but if you can get it there, it will run. And this raises a question in my mind because tied to this, in fact, the reason I'm doing this right now is I had written something about Microsoft's education efforts, and we have something about that later in the show. And I went back and I rewatched the education event from last May that we went to, where they introduced Windows 10S and some education tools and whatever else. And it was interesting to kind of re-listen to Terry Myerson describe this product and what the point of it was, and to kind of also evaluate where it's gone compared to where he said it would be. And I don't think there is anywhere on the web, including at Microsoft.com, a good definition of the term verified apps. But Windows 10S runs verified apps. Typically, those are acquired from the store, right? The idea here is that you're not going to download something from the web and have it run. It just won't work. I did download an ISO from the web, and it did work. I couldn't do it from Windows 10S, but once I got it there, it did work. So I can only conclude that the Microsoft-created Windows installer is a verified app, which is fine, right? It's from Microsoft. Why wouldn't it work? Mm-hmm. But it kind of begs the question, why couldn't other Microsoft Win32 desktop apps run fine on Windows 10S, including the Update Advisor or the Media Creation Tool? Like, why would you prevent those things from running on Windows 10S? And I guess on the flip side, if you're going to prevent those from running, why would you allow this to run too? It's kind of a strange...
Yeah.
It's kind of a strange situation. So I don't know how to answer that.
Is verified synonymous with UWP? No,
because the other thing that runs on Windows 10S, of course, are those desktop bridge apps, right? So if you get Spotify... Right. Is a good example of the Office 2016 apps you can get through the store.
Okay. So is,
you know, those
store,
those work.
Are store apps synonymous with verified?
No. Well, I mean, not exactly. I mean, they say them interchangeably. But I guess what I'm suggesting is if I can run a desktop installer that I did acquire from the web on Windows 10S.
Right. It's feasible. It actually can work. Right.
Well, of course. I mean, I find that to be interesting. I'm actually going to, after the show's over, I'm going to do it again because I've had all kinds of problems with this. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. The other thing I just wanted to point out with regards to Windows 10S is that in updating the Windows 10 field guide, I've over time noticed a number of very subtle differences in behavior between Windows 10S and Windows 10 Pro or Home or whatever. There's some edge things that are different that are very subtle. Somebody wrote me a question about Spotify that doesn't really matter. But because of this, I went and installed the Spotify store app, which is a desktop bridge app. It's actually the desktop app in a container. And when you do that on Windows 10 Pro, that application installs two items in your startup folder. The Spotify app itself runs at startup, which is crazy. It makes no sense. But there's also a startup process that's called something like Spotify Web Helper, which I take to be something similar to the iTunes Helper app that runs if you install iTunes. Mm-hmm. I mean, even Apple doesn't cause iTunes to run and boot up, but they do have a startup process. I guess we kind of knew that this was possible, but I find it crazy that any store app would install two startup processes. I do not approve of or understand. What's interesting, though, is when you install that app on Windows 10S, they do appear in your startup group and task manager, but they're disabled. So they don't actually start up. And this goes back to one of the things that I noted when I took notes when I listened to Terry Morrison again talking about Windows 10S the first time he introduced it. He said there was a comparison, you might remember this, of boot up times, Windows 10S to Windows 10 Pro. The very first time you logged in, it was much quicker than Windows 10 Pro. And then it kind of evened out a little bit. But Windows 10S always would boot up more quickly, and you would get into Windows more quickly on Windows 10S than you would on Windows 10 Pro. And I actually took a note, and I said, this seems artificial. I wonder if this is because Windows 10S cannot install desktop apps, and desktop apps can put stuff in startup, right? Mm-hmm. Like, in other words, a lot of the performance degradation that we see in Windows today is actually because of applications that are putting crap in startup.
Right.
They slow your computer when you boot and when you log in, and they consume resources all the time, so your computer seems slower over time. Mm-hmm. So Windows 10S, they actually block that from happening. It's completely artificial. It's not like it's been architected to be a better system. Mm-hmm. It's the same system. They just prevent that one thing. And I think this Spotify thing, I don't mean to say it proves it, but it makes me lean toward my initial assumption about this, which is that there's nothing special about Windows 10S. It just literally prevents applications from putting stuff in, they're in startup, but they're disabled. You could do that on your own computer. In fact, it is worth doing. Anyone should do this. It's a good tip. Every once in a while, bring up Start Manager, go to Startup, and look at the stuff that's starting up, and turn off the stuff that you know you don't need.
Yep, I do that a lot because it's weird how some things get in there and you're like, wait, did I put that in there?
Where'd this come from? Obviously some of the stuff you do need, don't be ridiculous about it.
Right.
But, the Spotify stuff, even if you use Spotify every day, you probably don't need that. If you were using iTunes, I would take the iTunes stuff out of there. There's some auto update stuff, which is important, but will come with an impact. So if you use Chrome or Flash or any Adobe product, actually, or Apple products, there's a little EXE that's kind of hovering around that is looking for updates for that software. So you have a trade-off there between, being secure and up to date or having better performance.
I think the thing to always go back to with Windows 10S, and I think Microsoft's going to say something about this fairly soon, is Windows 10S is really Windows 10 Pro in S mode, right? Like, that was the official name of that product. And that's what it is, right?
By the way, it's certainly accurate to say that, because S mode on Pro is like a locked down version of Pro. In other words, it takes Pro and it locks it down.
Well, and when you buy the upgrade, you get Pro, not Home.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's absolutely a subset of Windows 10 Pro, not Home.
Yeah.
That said, I mean, I technically that's true. There's no doubt about it. But I think because of the superset subset thing, I sort of think of Windows 10 Pro as a mode of Windows 10S. You know, like Terry Myerson also had said a phrase, which you may remember. I had forgotten he had said this, but he used a lot of S words, as if to imply that the S in Windows 10S means streamlined, secure, superior performance, whatever it was. But the thing he said that I had completely forgotten was he referred to it as the soul of Windows.
Whoa.
Right? And I think this hints toward, the Immaculate Conception. No, I think it.
Windows 10, the Holy Ghost.
The Holy Trinity of Windows. Mm-hmm. I think it points to the notion that Windows 10S they see it as the future. This is the future they want to get to. That they can strip out some of this legacy stuff, which is obviously a huge chunk, and get to this kind of streamlined future. But anyway, I'd forgotten he had said that. I found that to be kind of interesting. But, Windows 10S to Pro, I mean, the way I look at it is because Pro is literally more functionality.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I to me, the S kind of stands for subset, when you think about it. I mean, it literally is a subset.
It's the S word.
It's sriracha. It that's what it's doing.
You know, I've been looking at a new operating system. I think gives me many of the features you're talking about here with Windows
10S. But, I was a big fan of Warp.
OS 2 Warp, sure. Baby. Support for Windows and DOS built right in.
I like that it's on CD-ROM.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is
it is the server version, though.
It is disk at 1.4 CD-ROM. Oh, there's the CD-ROMs. Look at that.
Yeah, because you got to boot the system to get into the, you know what I mean?
Wow.
You know, it's funny. When I started writing full-time about Windows for PC Week, the first story I basically was all over was OS 2 versus Windows. Yeah, and so I have to always, every week, cover what was happening in each operating system. Like, here's what's going on OS 2 this week. Here's what's going on Windows. Right.
Well, they supported both for a long time.
They did.
Well,
and OS 2 was supposed to be the future.
As I remember, the funny kind of deal was that Microsoft sent a team to IBM who basically wrote OS 2, and IBM sent a team to Microsoft who basically wrote NT.
Yep.
Yep. Right? Ed Iacobucci, who was working for IBM.
Yeah.
The most interesting thing about how Windows won to me is that Windows in the late 80s was a skunkworks project and Microsoft was going to OS 2. And these got two guys, I don't remember their names, but they basically went to Steve Ballmer and said, please, you got to look at this. And they had figured out how to map the memory space into a flat memory space instead of having, you know, remember DOS memory was always divided into
memory.
They said, we figured this out. We can make this thing 32-bit. And he showed it to Bill Gates, and it kind of was like, okay, guys, you keep working on this. And they saw this as the way that they were going to break from IBM. And so they eventually screwed over IBM, because for a few years there, they kept promising IBM that this is the future. This is where we're going.
They were working hand in hand on it, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yep.
OS 2, Warp Server, third generation, 32-bit preemptive, multitasking operating system. And
I think
supports more clients than any other server like DOS.
Yeah, but you know
Windows,
what it didn't do, Leo, was run Windows apps.
This isn't the Windows one. This is the server one. It doesn't have.
I think it was Warp on the client that was the first version.
It had Windows 3.1.
They could run 16-bit apps. That's what it was.
Yeah,
they couldn't run 32-bit apps. So, you know, the Microsoft got around their little licensing deal with them or partnership by saying, "Oh no, you license 16-bit Windows."
Right.
You know, we've moved on to Windows 95 and Office 95.
Right.
You can't run that stuff. And that was the end of that.
Yep.
Because their tagline was something like a better Windows than Windows or runs Windows better than Windows.
Exactly.
Yep. Which it kind of did for a little while.
Yeah. Because of the better memory model, like sounds like.
Yeah.
A lot of banks. I used OS 2 for years.
Yes.
I was a huge fan of OS 2, but you know, as soon as the Windows 95 stuff happened, you could see the writing on the wall Microsoft just stabbed them in the back.
All right.
One more thing. Wait, what was the other thing?
Let's see. 10S.
No, it was a 10S thing. I can't remember. Damn it.
Are you doing a field guide to 10S, by the way? I'm not saying it's sarcastically.
No, but I'm updating No. Yeah. So I'm updating the field guide so that each chapter is. So I use Windows 10S as the basis for each chapter now, and I compare it to Pro to see what the differences are. So if there's a thing that doesn't work in S, which is typically how this works, right? I call that out just so people on S understand that that's not. Mm. Oh, this is the other thing. I just remembered. Thank you. it's very instructive. I don't know if you do this, Mary Jo. I do this a lot, actually. I do this a lot with Apple in particular, but you can go back and watch previous speeches that they gave, and it's kind of interesting if it's 6 months or a year, a few years later, to see what they were talking about and see what panned out and what didn't pan out and so forth. One of the things that has not panned out with Windows 10S, and granted, we're only, I don't know, 7-8 months in, not even a full year, is of course at the time all of the devices they were showing on stage, and there were only a handful of them, were inexpensive education devices. But Terry Myerson said at that time, we want this to be on premium devices as well. We have something to announce, which was Surface Laptop. But in the coming months, you will see several premium devices from our partners as well. Yeah. Obviously, not a single one of those has appeared. And in speaking with PC makers, I've heard the same thing consistently when it comes to this, is there is zero interest in this product, zero, from their customers. And they just don't – no one has ever asked for this. No one wants it. and no PC maker has ever shipped a premium Windows 10 S device. Mm-hmm.
True.
Did you get the 17083 already? Did we talk about that? Because that came up right before the show.
So that's where the, yeah.
That's the one you're talking about. Sets gets knocked out and stuff. That's where sets was eliminated.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to be able to get it installed before the show is over, but that's one of the things we're trying to do over here on this.
It's all about the fonts, apparently.
I know. The whole beginning of that post is about the font. New font settings. I'm like, what?
Really?
Mm-hmm. You know, and then I'm like, I guess that's to show it's a creator's thing. But I don't know. I guess I know there are people who care a lot about fonts. Yep. They're the same people who care about Fluent, too. Those same people.
I don't know if you saw my tweet about Fluent. I think the Fluent stuff is kind of cool. I think it's important. But I also think that the look and feel of stuff is taking precedent over the functionality that if you look at apps like Mail and Calendar, there are much deeper needs for those apps than making them look better. This is basically the 2018 version of putting lipstick on a pig, right? That thing that they used to talk about on the Office team. You know, it's fine. I like it even. I like the notion of this stuff getting more attractive, but these are also some of the worst apps that have ever been created, and I don't understand how they're included with Windows 10. Like, they need to be fundamentally updated.
Well, they're not. I think we talked a lot about this when they first came out with Windows 10. The Mail and Calendar apps that are built in weren't even built by the team that does Outlook, right? It's not even the same team.
Remember, it was Chris Jones and the Windows Live team who initiated this. And they were, if I'm not mistaken, the first versions that shipped in Windows 8 were JavaScript and HTML, and they were based on the web versions of Outlook.com. But, so, I mean, they're woefully inadequate. Yeah,
it's just odd that we have such divergent, like, all the rest of the Outlooks now are kind of starting to become the same thing, right? Like, a cross-platform Outlook is Outlook, right? Yeah. And, so, but then you have this thing, and it's like, okay,
tell me what you think of this. I said this off the cuff a little bit, and I know that people will say that this is overly simplistic, and they have on Twitter, certainly. But I think Microsoft needs to do what Apple did with the Mac with regards to Mail, Calendar, and Contacts, which is that's a feature of the OS, right? Yeah. Those apps, or it could be a single app, whatever, needs to be part of the OS. And what that means to me is that Outlook has to come out of Office, and it has to be included with Windows. And if you and it has to be completely redone. Outlook 2016 is a hairball. Speaking of hairballs, and but on the flip side, the Mail Calendar and People apps in Windows 10 are Fisher Price toys. There has to be a happy medium. I don't care if it's one app or three apps, whatever. That's, you know, people have opinions on that stuff. But this needs to be a feature of Windows. And when you look at it from a support life cycle, I actually think it works fine, because people who are still running Windows 7 or Windows 8X can continue to use Outlook 2016 and in the future Outlook 2019 for the life cycle, for the lifetime of those operating systems. Mm-hmm. Not a problem. But moving forward, the modern client can be in Windows 10, and it should be aligned with those mobile clients that we see on Android and iOS in particular, and with the stuff they're doing on the web. And I think we have like seven different versions of Outlook something out in the world.
I know. Right.
I think this is the time to converge it all.
Well, maybe they'll do what we're going to talk about later in the show, what they did with Office. Maybe there'll be more convergence in the code bases. And
yeah, I mean, it needs to happen. I've not heard explicitly anything about them even thinking about it per se, but
no.
And
maybe part of the reason they wouldn't do that too is because of all the emphasis moving forward on Teams. You know, like, Microsoft's never going to kill email, and they think there's a place for email, and a lot of people still use email. I mean, most of us do.
I don't think they should kill email. I think email's important.
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
I also think it's too important to use a tinker toy. It's just part of the problem.
I mean, you don't have to use those apps, but they're there.
You do on Windows 10 S, unless you want to go
use
the web.
A mail app.
I do. I use Outlook.
Outlook. Yeah. And Paul, you just use the web.
I use Google Inbox.
Yeah.
It's a web app. It works great.
A lot of the
it's super fast.
A lot of the Windows email clients are pretty powerful but old. Besides that,
yeah, this old, they're old fashioned.
I use Clausmail, but there's Pegasus.
Outlook is based on Mappy code from the 1990s. It's like it's giant hairball. It's awful. And I also, people also, by the way, there are people who love Outlook. I get it. Your brain damage. It's not your fault. The point is, this stuff that you think you need, a lot of it you don't need. You know, there's too much, there's just too much legacy stuff in it. You can tell something's old when you still hear people use phrases like, I'm going to send you a schedule plus.
Yeah.
Which is a term literally from the 1990s. This is 20 years ago. Literally, I mean, over 20 years ago, Outlook, the app dates back to, I think, 97 was the first version.
Mm-hmm.
But it comes from something called Schedule Plus, which was an app that did everything but email, I guess. That was part of Office before that.
I hear
what else can we fix today?
Silence indicating maybe we should move on to talk about AR, VR.
Okay.
And what's MR? So
we're going to talk about the distant future.
Mixed reality?
Mixed reality is MR.
Hmm.
So, okay. So now we've been talking about the near term, like what's going on with Windows. So now let's talk about this whole next thing and what's going on in the future. So we know that Microsoft's looking for places where it's trying to make Windows matter in the future, right? Like they know that they missed the mobile boat completely at this point. And so they're trying to keep the PC relevant. And the way they're trying to keep the PC relevant is find different kinds of applications where it makes more sense to do them on PCs than it makes sense to do them anywhere else. That's why they've been really pushing things like mixed reality and augmented reality and all this creative update stuff. And, everybody's a creator. This is why they're doing that. So this week, Brad got a couple of really nice scoops. Brad, where is he? Man in the bunny suit.
Unfortunately, he's right on top of you.
He is. Thanks, Brad.
I'll move you over.
So Brad heard that there were some layoffs this week at Microsoft, and nothing huge, like 200-300 people maybe, which happens a lot at Microsoft. There's always people being cut when they have mid-year reviews. People get cut as low performers, move on.
Yeah, I mean,
it's normal.
Yeah, any company that size.
Yeah, and then Brad said he heard a lot of these cuts were in Windows, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of curious. So then he found out that Microsoft had been doing some things around kind of reorging parts of Windows. And one of the things they were doing was taking this thing they have called Evoke Studios, and they're mushing it together with this other part of the company that did all these things like Paint 3D and Mixed Reality Viewer and Remix 3D, all those things that are around making Windows more of a 3D platform, 3D-friendly platform. So they're taking Evoke Studio, which is the part of Microsoft with Chris Prattley, who we had on the show before, who was working on the redesigned Photos and Videos app, that whole Story Remix thing that was in Windows 10. And they're bringing Story Remix together with Paint 3D and Mixed Reality Viewer and Remix 3D. And they're creating something they're calling the MR Studio. MR Studio, Mixed Reality Studio, is going to kind of be the focal point going forward for all of these things. And what I think is happening is they're going to try to make these things, try to kind of figure out a reason for these things to be. I don't think there's been a lot of uptake on all this stuff. It demos really well. It's cool to like see, hey, there's a mixed reality viewer. Hey, there's 3D paint stuff. But do you know anybody using it? I don't. So I think that mission of this is going
to
be...
I'm sorry, it's just that... Go ahead. Those headsets are all like 50% off right now.
I know.
They just came out.
Right. So almost all of those mixed reality headsets that over Christmas were like $300, right? $400, whatever. They're now all half off on Amazon.
Yep.
That's not usually a good sign, right? That's usually a sign like, hey, nobody's buying these things.
You don't usually cut prices on best-selling products.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you take these two things together, they're combining all these things into a mixed reality studio, cuts in the prices of these mixed reality headsets. I think what's happening is they're trying to figure out, okay, we've got all these 3D assets and all these things about mixed reality, virtual reality, augmented reality. How can we bring all this together and actually make it be something marketable, right? My guess what they're going to do is really push hard on the business case scenario. I felt like they were really doing that with HoloLens. When HoloLens first came out, it wasn't just, hey, this is just for gamers. It was more like, there are some really cool business applications for this. And there never were really business applications for the mixed reality part of the equation. It was all like, yeah, Minecraft, yeah, games and, you know, consumer apps. So I think they're kind of retrenching and trying to figure out a way to make mixed reality, augmented reality, virtual reality more kind of in alignment with their business mission. That's what I think is going on.
By the way, the other piece that's semi-missing there is just non-gaming use for individuals, right? There are applications of virtual reality or mixed reality that are just things like 360-degree videos and things like that. It needs to be more general use than just gameplay.
It does. You know?
Even though it's simpler and less expensive than, say, previous VR solutions on a PC, it's still a fairly complex setup, too, for a normal person. Mm-hmm. A lot of wires, you know, a lot of stuff to keep track of, two different motion, two motion controllers, giant headset. It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's kind of telling. Another fun fact that Brad found out when he was looking into this was all those assets, the Paint 3D, Mixed Reality Viewer, Remix 3D, what Microsoft calls those collectively is EDM, which stands for Everyday Magic. Everyday Magic,
geez. Yeah. This was the reason you had the Disco Cats on Twitter, right?
It is. Yeah.
Electronic dance music thing.
Yeah. 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 So, but if you think about that, okay, it's kind of a cute name, Everyday Magic, but it also kind of tells you that was a consumer thing, right?
They're trying to appeal to the kids and the Harry Potter fans.
Just, yikes. I mean, no business user is going to be like, hey, let me use some of this Everyday Magic.
Yeah, right? Really.
I don't know. Anyway, another interesting thing about mixed reality, by the way, this is sort of tangential, but also interesting to our listeners, I think. Don Box. Remember Don Box?
Of course.
Yes, Don Box, father of Calm and all that. He fairly recently was... he's been involved in Windows for a while. He was on Xbox for a while, then became one of the core engineers in Windows. He just got a new job as director of engineering for mixed reality, and he's working for Alex Kipman now.
Okay. Wow.
So that to me, though, is a good sign that says you're going to take somebody who's got, long-time Microsoft engineering chops, bring them over to the mixed reality guys and kind of figure out where they're going to go from there. I like hearing that. I think it's kind of an unusual move, having a technical fellow report to a technical fellow.
My issue here is that I don't think there is a version of the story where mixed reality becomes anything big.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mean to say it goes away or it's not, worth looking at or doing, but it's kind of a niche-y thing.
I still think there's a lot of potential for augmented reality and HoloLens, right? We know they're working on the next generation of HoloLens, maybe late this year, maybe early next year. We know they're building it. Unless they've canceled it, but we think they're building it. And
I heard very recently they were working on it, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. So if, the applications for HoloLens that I found really impressive were things like what you can do with elevator repair and things like that. That's
virtual. Like there's a person up here helping you with something in the real world. I agree.
I think that stuff was
very interesting.
That doesn't have to be niche, right? Like that could be big if HoloLens price comes down. If the technology gets more wearable, easier to use, it could work, right? And I feel better about somebody like Don Box working on this now. I feel like it makes it a little like a little more serious, should I say?
It's interesting where the elite of Microsoft end up. You know, it's like David Cutler heading over to the Xbox was kind of an interesting move. You know, Don Box going to virtual or mixed reality is equally curious, you know, at the time.
Anyway, back to Next is the part of Microsoft that's working on this whole mixed reality studio thing that they've just reorged, right? So that's one of the things. What's next for Windows when you use the weird spelling of next? AR, VR, MR. Okay, that's one. Another thing where the next part of the Windows division is very focused is education. And this week there was a big education show in London called BET, the BET conference. Mm-hmm. So Microsoft made a whole slew of announcements at the BET conference. They introduced with some of their OEM partners some more $189 PCs that they're trying to get them to pit against Chromebooks. They talked about some of the new things coming to Office 365 for education around office dictation and assistive technologies and new learning tools, immersive reader, all those kinds of things. And they had some new updates to Minecraft too, or like there's going to be a chemistry plugin kind of thing for Minecraft.
Is awesome.
It looks really awesome. Yeah. It makes sense, right?
It's worth just calling this one out. I just think this is amazing because if you think about what Minecraft is fundamentally, is you literally mine for elements and then you use them to build things, to create things, right? It's a very creative kind of a game. And so this does this for chemistry, for different kinds of elements, right? And the example they gave me was, you know, that you could get hydrogen and oxygen and combine it in the right way to create water, you know? It's when
this
you hear
is
this.
All
it's
I wanted. This is awesome. Can I download it?
I believe it's called the chemistry update and it's coming. Well, it's coming to the education version at first.
You have to have Minecraft like education.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's neat. It's just really neat.
I want it. So, you know, they see students as the future creators, right? And current creators. So that next part of Windows is really, really focused on doing some big things in the education space. And I saw, Paul, you wrote a whole thing giving Microsoft an A. Microsoft an A for its education efforts.
Okay. So I mentioned this earlier back in May, you know, Mary Jo and I and others went to that Microsoft EDU event at which they announced Windows 10S and the Surface laptop. I rewatched that video because I wanted to reacquaint myself with what did they announce a year ago? Well, not, you know, 8 months ago. And then what has happened since, because there's been some development since, and then what did they just announce and what does this all add up to, right? Because one of the issues for Microsoft is that they're losing the education market in the United States. And we're starting to see the impact of Chromebooks in other countries as well. New Zealand, I think the UK and some other places in Europe. So, actually, if you go back and do this, and again, I really strongly recommend doing this kind of thing. It's really interesting to look at the full breadth of what they announced, right? Windows 10S, obviously, although I don't feel like there's been a lot of uptick there, but they announced it there. Full Office is coming to the Microsoft Store. Mm-hmm. That is something that, as of the time of the article, was not available. But actually, as you'll see later today, that may literally be happening right now as we speak. There's a bunch of features in Microsoft Edge that were inspired by education, including the ability to set tabs aside because students are the type of people who do research. They do they have a bunch of tabs open about a particular topic. They want to put that stuff aside and then move on to the next thing, and then they can go back and find that research again. It's a cool feature. And then I think the kind of the heart of this stuff is the hitting at the Chromebook easy management and deployment functionality. They have a new app for schools called Set Up My School PC. It's wizard-driven. A teacher or an admin could do this. You make a bunch of USB keys and you walk around and every 3 minutes you can pop one in a PC and get that thing going. And that's kind of cool. Intune for Education, which I think became generally available last summer. Bunch of hardware partners. It was basically the world's biggest PC makers except for Lenovo. But now as of this week, Lenovo's on board. Also, you may recall the Intel Classmate PCs from a few years ago was bought by, I think it's a Japanese company, but at least it's an Asian company. New versions of those coming online this week as well. Minecraft Education Edition, which we were just talking about, which was updated this week or will be updated soon. and then Office 365 Education, which is based on the commercial versions of Office 365. So it has Microsoft Teams and all those advanced features, mm-hmm. but with much simpler kind of admin capabilities. Since that time, of course, Microsoft 365 has spawned Foundation version as well. And then, of course, we see the stuff that Mary Jo was alluding to this week, including some, like, you know, investments in STEM, learning tools, yeah. Lots of mm-hmm. enhancements to Office, the apps, but also Office 365, you know, more PC Maker partners, like I said. I mean, yeah. when you kind of add all this stuff up, and also when you look at what Google has done recently with regards to education, because, you know, Google is actually in a pretty good position, especially here in the United States, in that they have a simple solution that appears to work pretty well for schools. It's inexpensive. The management isn't terrible. They haven't really done much. I mean, it's interesting. Microsoft mm-hmm. coming from behind as they are feels the need to really be aggressive with this stuff. But when you kind of add all this stuff up from May through today, I think it's pretty impressive. And I've mm-hmm. said this a lot about Microsoft over the past few years, because I know in the Windows community, there's a lot of grousing around their strategy and if they're doing the right thing and whatever it is. But I think with regards to education, and you could say this about other things too, they've clearly done everything they can do. The uptick of this stuff, in this case in education, is not up to them. I mean, we'll see whether this mm-hmm. convinces schools to come on board. But the trouble is that once schools go down a certain path with a certain product, mm-hmm. It may be hard to get them back. And I think, you know, that's yeah. the issue. Schools that went iPad, those are easy pickings. I don't think anyone yeah. had a good experience with iPad. The problem for Microsoft is that people have had good experiences with Chromebook. But my God, are they doing everything they can do? Yes.
Well, it's good they are, because for a while it felt like they weren't doing anything, right? Like
exactly.
I kept thinking, like, okay, Chromebooks are eating your lunch in the U.S., Microsoft. They're not. Yeah. They're not outside of the U.S., but in the U.S., Microsoft's Windows is yeah. really trailing Chrome OS in market share in K-12. And I kept thinking, are they going to do something? Are they going to just, like, forget it, walk away from the education market? And it's nice to see them actually get very focused on it over the past couple of years, right?
It cannot be overstated how important yeah. this market is to yeah. the future of the company. This is, if you allow an entire generation of children to grow up with Google and or Apple products, then you're done. It's over.
Yeah.
They are not going to want or expect or demand mm-hmm. your products if they didn't use them growing up.
True.
You know, teachers who are tend to be on the older side compared to students, that is, obviously see the value in Microsoft. No, I mean, you know, they could be in their 20s. I mean, but they're older yeah. than the students yeah. they're teaching, obviously.
Right.
See the value, typically, I would think, of Microsoft's productivity offerings. But a student coming up in the world has no understanding of this stuff. And if they're never presented with it, if they're never using it in school, they're not going to understand or care that this stuff exists or that it might be better or whatever. And I think right. they have a compelling case mm-hmm. with regards to functionality for sure.
I have two questions for you two.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between mixed reality and augmented reality? Chatham yep. is confused, so, as am I.
All right, so I would say that, first of all, the two types of mixed reality are virtual reality and augmented reality. Augmented reality, as its name states, you're augmenting reality with something virtual. So typically, if you're using a headset, it's not occluding your view of the outside world. That's included, and you see what Microsoft calls holograms. They're not really holograms, but whatever. They're virtual elements in the real world. Like Pokemon Go is an example of augmented reality.
Yeah, they're projected.
Because you're seeing the world
yeah.
through the camera of the phone. Right. Virtual reality, you are occluding the outside world. It's all virtual. So you're in a virtual world. It's typically 360 degrees or whatever. You can kind of look around in this virtual world. But if you could walk into a table if you're walking around, because the table is not represented in that world. And so mixed reality is just an umbrella term.
All kinds.
To describe.
A and V.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, now, confusingly, so,
by
the way.
Can I take a crack at it?
Yeah,
but let me say one more thing. Unfortunately, the term Windows Mixed Reality is a brand, and today it refers solely to virtual reality experience.
No,
there we go. Virtual reality.
Yeah. Virtual reality.
Yeah, that's what
confusing.
I was going to say.
That's confusing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's a brand right. called Mixed Reality, which is really
Windows Mixed
Windows
Reality.
Mixed Reality. Really yeah.
Virtual
so reality. Windows Mixed Reality, I was going to say, is virtual reality. right now.
That's right.
But
that's
right. But in the not too distant future, Microsoft's hinting that you actually will be able to interoperate with things that are augmented reality products like HoloLens, right? Okay. And that it'll be more of a continuum of experiences with augmented reality, you know, like the HoloLens at one end,
that's right.
And then dumber virtual reality headsets at the other end. So mixed reality will be the whole spectrum. But right now, Windows mixed reality is just a fancy name for virtual reality.
Got it.
And to be semi-fair to Microsoft, I it's probably worth pointing out that there is a single SDK set of APIs that kind of targets both. Obviously, there are AR capabilities from HoloLens that don't work in Windows Mixed Reality and vice versa, but there are some capabilities that overlap on both. And I think the idea there is that if we can get developers into this world, it will be easy for them to move into the AR future if that's what happens on Windows. And I think you're right. I think like Windows Mixed Reality V2 or whatever could include AR headset, like AR headset spec, which is essentially a low-cost version of HoloLens. Yeah. Oh, and the other thing is, remember that one of the fundamental breakthroughs of Windows Mixed Reality compared to previous versions of virtual reality headsets on Windows is that it includes the room sensing sensors in the headset, that you don't have to set up external sensors like you did with Oculus Rift or HTC Vive. That technology comes from HoloLens. What it allows you to do is specify an area of a room, because you can use it sitting here if you want, but you could also say, well, my room is 10 by 10 or 10 by 12. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in it. It can't see the stuff. But if you specify this is the area, it will let you walk in that area without warning you. But if you try to walk outside that area, it can't prevent you from doing it, but it will, you know, probably warn you in some way so that you don't walk into a wall or a desk or whatever might be there. But fundamentally, with VR, you can't see the room. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
What was the other question?
That helped.
It
helped.
What was that? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
I had another question, but it's really not related to this. I'm just wondering why they don't let other people use Minecraft for education. You have to have a school address to get it. And boy, I'd love to have it.
It's neat because it's free. If you have that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'd pay for it. I don't care about paying for it. I just don't understand why I can't get it.
Does your kid have a school address?
Maybe I could do it that way.
As long as he has an EDU address, he can get it for free.
A lot of schools use Gmail.
Sure.
As long as it's
an education address. It doesn't have to be a Microsoft address, I don't think, right?
Yeah, No, it's free. Yeah. It's free for everybody in education. I mean, that's what one of the things that's kind of cool about it.
They sell it for $5 if you're homeschooling, but you still have to be associated with a homeschool association. That's just frustrating because it would be really a great tool for parents to have at home to work with their kids. I'd love Michael to get into. He loves Minecraft. He could learn chemistry.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't imagine this will come to the mainstream version of Minecraft, right? Because there are education market specific features in the education version of Minecraft, obviously, with regards to classes and things like that. But I could see this coming to Minecraft.
Aren't there modules for Minecraft too about teaching people to code that aren't necessarily tied to Minecraft for education?
Raspberry Pi has the Python.
Okay.
You can get that. Yeah, that's not this chemistry thing is really interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to pirate it. That's fine. Thanks, Mike. That's Microsoft.
So I don't remember the exact dates, but Microsoft probably announced Minecraft for Education, their version, their efforts early last year, released whatever first version by mid-year, something like that. I think their big announcement around Minecraft at the education event last May was probably the addition of coding capabilities, right? So that you can write code that impacts the Minecraft worlds that you're creating.
Yeah, that I already have. That's available. Yep. But this chemistry thing is fantastic.
I think so, too. It's amazing. Yeah. So I'd be surprised. When you hear what this is, you're like, yes, this makes so much sense for Minecraft. It's wonderful. And again, we've talked about this in the past. People are so nervous about Microsoft buying Minecraft. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
They haven't just been a great steward of it. They've literally made all the right moves. They've combined all the code, most of the code bases into one and allowed cross-platform play. I mean, they've done an astonishing job of advancing Minecraft too, not just taking care of it, but making it better. It's neat.
Yeah.
be really neat if they offered it to parents.
you're really stuck on this education. I think the chemistry, the chemistry stuff, not so much maybe the learning of chemistry, although learning is what's going to occur anyway, right? If you think about it, like Minecraft as just a kind of a casual game is a learning experience, period. Anyway, I mean, it's a really healthy thing to do in some ways.
Adding some curriculum to it's not a terrible thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably worth checking with him if he has a school. Yeah. You know, say, hey, do you have Minecraft education?
Leo, you are an educator. I would click that button.
No, because I need an EDU address.
You do, right. Yeah.
All you need is your school email address.
Right.
And the ability to receive the occasional newsletter.
You also have to have Office 365 for education.
Yep.
Yeah. There you. This is a little frustrating. This is Microsoft using it as a promotional vehicle as opposed to an educational vehicle. Frankly. Sorry. Sorry. Anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt because I know you were talking about the future, and I'm talking about
that was the education bit. I think that we've covered it.
All right. You want to talk about the next stage?
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Healthcare.
So you're right. So there's one other area that's connected with another part of Next, not the Windows Next, but you know, in Microsoft's AI and research group, they have this part of that called Next also, and. Next, there in the AI Plus research group is very heavily oriented towards healthcare. So, you know, we've been seeing a lot of headlines lately about Amazon getting into the whole healthcare space. And just today, Apple getting into patient records with the latest version of iOS. Right. You know, Microsoft's been there for almost 10 years with this thing called Health Vault that I think a lot of people forget about. Health Vault is a patient record system that they were building 10 years ago. And even though Microsoft's been kind of getting out of some things around health, you know, when they dropped the band, there was questions about how would they stay in any kind of part of consumer health, you know, as far as statistics or letting people monitor their health. And it seems like they're staying in there with a health service that we don't know a lot about. And just last week, they also did do away with something called Health Vault Insights, which was an app for iOS and Android and Windows Phone that let people get insights on their health data. They said that was just a research project. Hold on, I got to stop Sirachi from something.
While she's gone, you know, remember one of the big disappointments with Microsoft Band was that it was supposed to proactively provide what they called insights. It was the same project. You know, the notion that we know so much about your life, not just your health and your fitness, but your schedule, and one of the big fictions that came out of this, and it was such a great idea from a science fiction perspective, was, you know, that this thing could come to you and say, hey, we notice you have a 9 a.m. meeting every Monday, and your heartbeat raises, you know, 15 minutes before it. Why don't you try meditating for 5 minutes or something? You know, it's a neat idea, right? It's something we will have. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But their notion of insights has never really kind of emerged as a public-facing consumer service, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's surprising that it hasn't, because this whole healthcare next thing that Microsoft has inside the research group, their mission is to, quote, provide personal health and wellness information to make healthcare more proactive and holistic, right? So they seem like they intend to stay in that space. We just haven't heard a lot about what they're going to do there. But I think that is going to be another area where they're looking, you know, if you're talking about Microsoft Next projects like Windows Next and AI and Research Next, that's one of the other key vertical focus points for them. Healthcare. Like you are going to hear a lot more from Microsoft and what they're doing in healthcare. And I just thought it was funny because a lot of the articles I saw today around Apple and the patient insights, they were all like, yeah, you know, Google had this thing, Google Health, that they dropped out of, and there's no mention of Health Vault. I'm like, well, there is one other big company that's still doing it.
Well, welcome to the mainstream press, Mary Jo.
I know. I'm like,
I see stuff like that every week. You know.
Yeah.
You know, the top five tech firms in the world, which are Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and you know, wait, hello. You know, it's crazy.
One of the guys watching says, I'm taking an espresso shot every time you say next. boy, am I buzzing.
You need Health Vault, buddy, because you're in trouble.
You know what
Health Vault needs. I'm sorry.
Now that I look at the next logo from the next computer company and Microsoft's, the computer company has a lowercase e. Microsoft has a lowercase x.
I think it's a lowercase x.
It's completely different.
Yeah. So it's completely different.
I think that's how they write it. You know, you see so many things at Microsoft written in different ways, all caps, all lowercase. Yeah. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Microsoft inconsistency? I've never noticed this before.
I know. Strange.
So somebody just sent me the download link for the Minecraft for Education. So it looks like they don't. I'm going to install it and see what happens. They don't really validate it or anything. They just.
I can tell you what's going to happen.
The licensing police.
They could turn me in. I saw an ad on Instagram that said, "Make money fast. Turn in your friends for piracy."
I love it. I'm going to do it.
Jeez Louise.
Leo, what's your Instagram account?
The Business Software Alliance has got out of control. I don't know if it's them, but I feel like it might be.
Who else would it be?
Who else would it be?
I mean, seriously.
Wow. Anyway.
It's like our version of America's War on Drugs, you know? Great job.
It looks like installed. Okay, cool. That's nice. Well, there you go. It was just kind of a phony wall.
Sure.
Yeah. Are you done with health, or is health done with us? Okay.
Health is done.
Both. This I thought was fascinating, and I saw this announcement. For years, Microsoft Office on Macintosh was a completely different program, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was funny, it wasn't really written Mac-ishly. Didn't use any of Apple's code or memory management. But it wasn't Microsofty either. It was just its own little thing. Yeah. That's all changing. I didn't realize this.
Well, changed, and now it's changing again. Oh. I think is the way to look at it.
Oh.
Yeah.
They unified the code base for Windows and Mac, right? Mm.
And Android.
Wait a minute. Android?
Android.
How can you say that's a unified code base? That's
you can't. Well, that's my
job. I know.
This is a little overblown, but anyway,
it is. It is. So you know what's funny? I wrote about this in 2014. There was a presentation that Microsoft did, and they said, you know what? We're trying to align all. It's more of an alignment than actually making them the same, the exact same, right? So. The idea was we have so many different versions of Office on so many different operating systems. You know, it would be great if the code bases could be more aligned. So they actually started working on this, and they were rewriting a lot of the shared code in C++ and bringing it to kind of a common repository so that there would be shared logic across the different operating systems.
That cat is whacked.
He's
all hopped up on espresso like your friend on Twitter.
Wow.
He's
what's he doing?
He's
you know
climbing.
What? Put a football game on.
He's climbing the microphone, right. Which I thought he was kind of good with Windows Weekly now, and thought he had gotten past this point, but I guess not. Anyway, they've been working on this. The Mac Office code base, it's 30 years old. So they had to go back and kind of re-architect good chunks of the Office code. And as of last week, they said, you know what? We finally did it. The code bases are in alignment across the platforms.
It's crazy. I don't know. What
I know.
What Leo was alluding to earlier was if you go back to like Word 6 and Office 6 or whatever, Microsoft was developing these applications for Windows and importing them to the Mac, and the result was a really terrible user experience, poor performance, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, it was stagger-stepped, too. We were always behind on the Mac side.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's different permutations of this over time, but over time, the Mac version of Office became its own thing. I don't know if this was Roz-Ho's Mac business unit or after that or whatever it was. But as Microsoft moved to Mac OS X versions of the suite, the apps became unique and took advantage of unique Mac OS X features. And, you know, that was seen as a good thing at the time. But the reason for the code unification, which is, you know, like she said, C++, where possible, obviously.
Yeah.
The shells of the applications are going to be native code to whatever the platform is. But, you know, if the Windows version of Excel has APIs in it for doing, you know, calculations, and they're super efficient. Why don't we use that everywhere else? I mean, why would we recreate that stuff everywhere? And so they began working on unifying as much of the code base as they could, which, by the way, I'm not 100% sure is all that much. But I, like she said, you know, I asked about this because I was confused what this meant. I mean, I sort of have an understanding of the past. I know why they went to what they did in the, you know, in the intervening years. And it's interesting to me that they're unifying the code as much as they can today. But as I said, at least somewhat facetiously on Twitter, you know, it would make for the best amount of code reuse would be to make one version of these apps as PWAs and have them run everywhere.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, you'd almost have to have a runtime and an engine for each platform to really have a unified code base.
It's not like that. It used to be on the Mac. That's not what they're doing today. Obviously on mobile platforms in particular, that would be a killer. I mean, I think that would just be useless, but I don't know how modular these things are. I don't know exactly what bits are C++ cross-platform code, whatever. But they have apparently arrived at the goal that they had set for themselves now, which is kind of strange because we're really kind of midstream. You know, Office 2016 has obviously been out for a couple of years. It's the current version. They did announce they're working on something called Office 2019. You might make the argument, like, why not just wait for that to do this and have that be kind of a part of that big bang release? But the truth is that these Office applications and suites across platforms are on a rapid release schedule. They're updated just like Windows is, or even more frequently, actually.
I'm looking at this presentation that Schweiber said you should look at, which is from a Minnesota users group, where they say this happened for the iPad already. They've done the work already for Office for the iPad. So this is...
Also, it's important to note that most Microsoft announcements do come via a Minnesota user group meeting. And I don't know why we didn't pay attention to this.
This is actually a really complete presentation. It's fascinating. It is. Yeah.
And you know what? It mirrors the thing I looked at from 2014, which was in a bigger venue. It wasn't a user group presentation, but it was like at a conference, you know. But the same diagram that you just saw, Leo, you know, so like the big block in the middle is this shared common logic block, right? And then there's, when I saw it, it had not just a platform layer under it, but it had like different mini platform abstraction layers for each of the operating systems. Yeah. So, you know, the idea isn't to make Office the exact same on all the platforms, because they want Office to light up in the correct way for the OS that it's on.
That's
right.
Fair.
If it's on
it
Mac.
It needs to be feel native.
It does. Yeah. It does.
It has to. So, you know, it should literally be native.
Yeah.
Right. And so some people said, so who does this benefit? Just Microsoft, right? No, it actually does benefit people who run Office on different platforms, because for one, you're going to get your feature iterations more in line with each other. So when they update Office Android, they have a smaller delta between when they're going to do Office, you know, for iOS, Win32. It's going to be more in alignment. Plus, the idea is, let's try to make the features as comparable and similar as we can to a point. So I think there are benefits for the users too. It's obviously there's a big benefit for Microsoft, right? But I think users will benefit from this.
It's cynical even by my standpoint. Like, what does Microsoft just do this for themselves? If you're an Excel user or whatever, and you'll have a more consistent experience between device types too. If you typically work on a Windows PC but want to go over something on your iPad, I mean, it's going to benefit you, obviously, if these things are closer to each other.
Exactly.
This may also be slightly tied to an ongoing issue that some people seem to have with Office 365. In fact, Brad raised this issue recently, which is that, you know, if you go to office.com or office, whatever it is, portal.office.com to your Office 365 account and download Office 365 today. Download the Office Suite today. There's no way to say, I just want these three apps. I don't want the whole thing, or I want these components, whatever. Yeah. It used to be able to do that with the standalone versions of Office. And the question is, why can't you do that with Office 365? Microsoft's answer is there's no benefit to doing it because of the shared logic between the apps. If you were just to strip off Excel and install all the rest, you'd only save like 110 megabytes. Like, most of the code in that thing is shared. And I think that speaks to this componentization and to the shared code stuff. That said, as we're going to see soon, they're in the midst of releasing Office to the store. And if I could be mistaken, but it might be possible that we'll be able to install individual apps, which I think would be kind of cool. Mm. You know, I made, for example, I might just want to have Word because I'm a writer or whatever, and I don't need the other stuff.
Yeah.
Bad kid.
It's the menagerie of Windows Weekly.
Silently ponder who the owner and who the pet is in this scenario, which I also suffer from because my dog is sitting at the bottom of the stairs, woofing up the stairs because that's where my wife and daughter are. And she can't stand it.
Yeah, so I think it's a pretty interesting and cool achievement. But like when you tweeted that thing about progressive web apps, I'm like, yeah, so what happens when they do that? Because you think they are going to do Office as a progressive web app.
Yep, I would think so.
Does this matter? I guess it'll still matter for some people who want to run it locally.
Because right? I think this effort is important to getting to that point, right? And we're assuming that they're going to take legacy apps and turn them into PWAs. I think they should. Mm-hmm. Progressive web apps means that these apps can behave differently on different platforms and take on native capabilities as they are exposed by whatever the platform is. And so it doesn't mean that the version on an Android tablet is going to look identical to the version on your Windows desktop. That's not what this means, right? That you could have a single progressive web app that looks and feels a little different and more native on each platform.
Mostly
that's
what it means.
One of the points of PWA
is that the user will have a common feature set across all platforms.
I think so. Yeah. Yep. That's one of the big benefits. Yeah.
And I want to thank the Mac-brained Twin Cities meetup.
As we do very often here on Windows Weekly.
Deep explanation of what's going on.
Yep. I would like to dedicate this episode to Windows Weekly.
I'm just glad there's user groups still. This used to be, 20 years ago, that is how you learn stuff from vendors. They'd come to user group meetings.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's amazing. Yep. That's still going on.
Yep. Listen, online stuff is great. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
You cannot beat in-face meetings sometimes. Yeah. I mean, it's just the way it is.
And you can't beat Winter in the Twin Cities either.
Hey, thank you. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Xbox Gaming Pass. Mary Jo, go ahead and find a box for Sriracha to play in because it's Paul time.
To Mary Jo's credit, she did actually add this to the notes.
I did.
Of course, the way she wrote it was Sea of Thieves, comma, something, something, blah, blah, blah. So I'd like to expand on that.
They're all talking about Sea of Thieves. I don't know. All right.
No, actually, this is awesome. So this is awesome. Xbox Gaming Pass, actually, I believe it's called Xbox Game Pass. I will correct that in the notes, is one of the most amazing things that Microsoft has done for the Xbox ecosystem, right? Obviously, it's a subscription service. It's only $9.99 a month. It offers the ability to download and play somewhere around, I want to say it's 130 games right now. It was over 100 when it launched, but it grows every month. And it's been described as the Netflix of video games. That's a little off because you don't stream the games, you actually download them. But the idea here is that you get such great variety. And for the price of two AAA games in a year, under $20, you can choose from this incredible library of games and play them at any time on your Xbox. Okay, so it's great. It's already great. But what they announced this week is rather incredible, which is that any new Microsoft Studios games that comes out, and this includes all the heavy hitters like Halo and Fable, if they do another Fable or whatever, Gears of War, will be available via Xbox Game Pass on day one. So the day that Halo 5 or Halo 6, whatever the next Halo is, comes out, it will be available via Xbox Game Pass on, if it is a cross-platform game, on both Xbox One and Windows 10.
That's sweet.
So Sea of Thieves is one of the big games we're looking for. Crackdown 3, remember that was supposed to come out in time for the holidays last year. Didn't quite make it. That's coming soon this year. And whatever the next Halo game is, these things will all be available on Xbox Game Pass. Now, for me, I pretty much play Call of Duty, I would say, approximately 99.9% of the time. But so, I wish I didn't. It's kind of an addiction. But, for most people, I think variety is a much bigger deal when it comes to video games. And this is a really interesting thing, especially when you think about multiple people using the same console. You might have kids or whatever.
No, that's true, because I spent $60 just to play a game. And if you want variety, that really adds up, you know?
The other, not only does it add up, but think about the situation where you read some reviews maybe and you're like, hey, this game looks awesome. I'm going to buy it, spend you $60.
Yeah.
Then you hate it. So you pay it, you play it for 15 minutes, never touch it again. And now there are issues like, can I even resell this thing? How does that work? This ability to just kind of pick and choose is astonishing. And by the way, to kind of beat the Netflix analogy to death, you know, one of the issues with Netflix is there's a couple of good movies in there. And obviously these days there's a bunch of good TV shows too, but let's face it. I mean, most of the movies in there are like these straight to video B pieces of junk that no one's ever even heard of. And that's not what Xbox Game Pass is. I'm sure there are some lousy games in there, but by and large, the majority of the games in there are actually pretty impressive. And
so for the price of 2 games a year, you get 100 games.
100 something games to pick and choose from.
Launch titles, which is.
Yeah, launch, AAA launch titles.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, I'm like going to do hitters. I'm going to do this because I just spent like $400 to get Forza and Madden, you know, a bunch of the 4K games that I'm not going to play them more than a few times.
Right. It is.
And you download the assets, right? These are not streaming games.
That's right.
You're playing them for real.
Yeah. You might want to invest in a USB hard drive.
Yeah, I do. I have a big drive.
Get that thing going and download to your heart's content. Right. Yeah. Yep.
And so you could play all 100 of them if you wanted? I mean, there's no.
Yeah, if you had the storage space. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. This is $10 a month.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Oh, no. I'm definitely doing this.
It is incredible.
Yeah, that's the little bit that just pushed me over the top.
It was already great, but this is now it's like really.
As Mary Jo so eloquently put it, "Sea of Thieves," blah 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 blah.
Yeah, something blah, something.
It worked,
something
blah, didn't
blah, it? Blah. Yeah, that's wow.
You know, they should have done it. They should have done an ad campaign around this, like for the price of a nice craft beer per month, you could have an Xbox Gaming Pass.
For the price of a Starbucks latte and a tip.
Well, for the price
choice of 100 plus games a month.
For the games I bought this month, 2 games, I get a year.
I know.
In fact, I feel like I've been an idiot to buy games.
What's the negative? Yeah. I don't know that there's a negative. It just depends. Like for me personally, the games that I play are not in Xbox Game Pass. Well, but see, I could change that. I mean, that's the thing, you know.
How could you change that? Like what do you mean? Just start playing.
Well,
Call
I could
of
just
Duty?
Play different games. Yeah, I could play like. It's not like they're bad. It's not like they're bad games.
Call of Duty's not in there. That's the point.
Call of Duty is not in there, right? It's unlikely that Activision or EA or whatever is going to put
the Microsoft games. Of course, yeah.
It's not. Well, is it just the Microsoft games? I don't think it's just the Microsoft games, but it's probably largely Microsoft games.
Mostly the Microsoft games. Okay. Well, I'm still doing it.
Good.
Because Sea of Thieves is going to be awesome, blah, 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 something, something.
Something, something, blah. Yeah, of course, obviously.
I don't even know what Sea of Thieves is. I just see everyone in my timeline playing it today. So
really?
I believe Sea of Thieves.
It's in a private beta, right?
It's in a private beta, that's right. Yeah.
Look at, see, I do know more than you think I know about gaming.
I want it now,
she
Daddy.
She has an Xbox. She's on the private beta.
I'm in the private beta. I'm playing it. I do know what Sea of Thieves
She's like, she's owning Sea of Thieves, and we don't even know.
Now,
gal that's killing everybody and see
if I get this. We have 2 Xboxes in the house, and Michael has an account, and I have an account. Is it just for me?
No, my understanding is that this will work like any game that you purchase. So if you download it on your account to your home Xbox, the people in your family will be able to access it from a different Xbox too. I mean, for most people, they would just have the one Xbox, and so obviously, if you have child accounts, they'll be able to access those games, but. It should work fine, and that I assume assuming your Xbox is the home.
Yeah,
you know,
I made mine the home on the Xbox One X.
It should. Yeah,
yes.
I've not tried this, but my understanding is that will probably work. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Just give me a minute. I'm installing it.
Yeah, and some of the games are available on Windows 10 as well, which is kind of a – I don't think that was true when it first launched, but it's something that happened over time.
I'm just downloading the all the games, all the games right now. I wonder how sure. how many terabytes that would be.
Yeah, I mean, just well, actually, I don't know if the Halo games. Some of the games I have are like 100 gigabyte. You know,
yeah,
crazy.
That's the problem. Like, oh, yeah. I mean, yeah,
100 of them now. Gigabyte. Wait, is that right?
Yeah,
maybe it's more.
Well, 16 gigabytes, 20 gigabytes for sure.
Oh no, I have 100 plus. I mean, like plus. The Halo games are like that. The
wow.
Geez, what was it? So I think the latest Gears of War is up in the 100 gig range.
Jeez, 100 gigs.
You know what yeah. you can stream now? It's actually kind of cool.
Mm-mm.
TurboTax.
Wow, that was unexpected.
TurboTax. Well, it's getting to be that it's the most wonderful time of the year. Tax time. Windows Weekly wow. brought to you by TurboTax Live. This is new from TurboTax. I've used, I mean, who hasn't? I mean, that's how I did my taxes forever. You know, they got complicated. And so now Lisa, you know, she's an enrolled agent herself and we hire a CPA. But I do my mom's taxes. I just started doing them because she was paying somebody to do them. I said, Mom, I can do these in a heartbeat. Of course, I do it on TurboTax. But now this is new. TurboTaxLive.com/windows. You can talk live to a CPA or an enrolled agent right on your screen. Get a tax expert via, by the way, notice they say one-way video, so you don't even have to, you know, you can stay in your jammies. And you can do it as often as you need for answers and advice on your taxes or advices on your taxes. I think this is brilliant. It's all backed with a 100% accuracy guarantee. Go to TurboTaxLive.com/windows. And just, you know, as a plug, if you're not already doing your taxes with TurboTax, get going. Hie thee to TurboTax. And I think with a new tax bill, I know I have a ton of questions. And even when I ask my CPA, she says, well, I'm not done reading it. TurboTax is ready. And you don't, you know, even if you think you know how to do your taxes, you definitely will want to consider changes in the tax rules, very complex changes. I don't even know if I'm going to save or lose in this one. But I can guarantee you, TurboTax Live does. TurboTaxLive.com/windows. TurboTaxLive.com/windows. You even get, you know, on demand CPA or EA. I really love this. This solves a lot of problems for people whose tax returns a little more complex than the ones, you know, you just do. And this year, everybody. All right. Ready for the back of the book, kids? By the way, we thank TurboTax for their support of Windows Weekly. Without it, I wouldn't be able to afford my Xbox Live, my Game Pass. I need it. Tips and picks, starting with Paul Theriot, his tip of the week.
Yeah, so I handle social media a little different than some, but I've always sort of divided my efforts so that I always went to Facebook for personal things because that's where my family and friends are. I use Twitter for work because it just seems to work well for that kind of thing. And I kind of ignored Instagram for many years, but I never really felt like Instagram was a particularly good service for, say, sharing photos, which was kind of the point of the service. But obviously, it's improved over time. But as anyone who uses Facebook will tell you these days, especially, it's kind of a double-edged sword. And I find it ironic that I almost see more noise on Facebook, which is full of people I know, family and friends, than I do on Twitter, which is full of people I don't know. Granted, there's a lot of noise on both, for sure. But Facebook has gotten kind of depressing to me. So if you're looking for a kinder, gentler social network, I guess, my tip is to give Instagram a shot because I found it to be a little bit closer to what I've always wanted Facebook to be. It's obviously very visual and focused on photography. And like Twitter, the people I follow on Instagram, some of which are companies, are not necessarily people that I know, although some of them are. And it's public, so it's not like, you have to ask me to, you know, follow me. It's anyone can, it's like Twitter in that way. But I found myself over the past year, especially, maybe even longer than a year, posting to Instagram first and then using that to post to Facebook. So I still have a presence on Facebook. It is still where my family and real friends are. I can't stand any of those people. I mean, frankly, it's right. I mean, it's full of like political nonsense. And it's weird. Like, it's weird how it's kind of devolved. And anyway, I really like Instagram. I'm seeing hints of stupidity on Instagram.
Yeah,
for
they're
sure.
starting to.
Yeah. As it gets more popular, I'm ruining it now by telling you about it. But no, it's just the way it is. I mean, there's kind of a weird pedantic nonsense thing that happens, I think, on any social network. Even people you know feel safe to be a little jerky because you're not standing there in front of them or whatever it is. I mean, there's something about these online interactions, but I still find Instagram to be kind of a happier place, you know, than Facebook. So please don't ruin it, but give it a shot. I find it to be interesting. I think, you know, Twitter can be a hellhole for sure.
Speaking of hellholes, here's Paul's reaction to Dedham, Massachusetts.
Yeah. No, that's my reaction too. I have 5+ hours to drive.
He was a happy man with lobster on his mind.
Yep.
And your friends messing with you.
It's me messing with them.
Oh, that was you. Oh, that's his phone.
Yeah. Don't ever leave an unlocked phone in my presence ever.
I thought he did it to you. Oh, that's funny. No. Oh, that's so funny. I completely agree with you. I love Instagram. It's the last social network on my phone.
Yeah. I think it's like the security through obscurity thing. I mean, not that there aren't probably half a billion people on Instagram or something, but compared to Facebook, it's relatively small. And it's also uniquely focused on photography for the most part. I mean, obviously they have live things that can occur on Instagram, which I pretty much ignore, but I don't know what it is. There's something about it. I really disliked the service 4 or 5 years ago or whatever. And these days I prefer it over the other two for sure.
Yeah. So. Here's my tip of the week. Mm-hmm. If you want to get thank you to Marsworm in the chat room. He said, scroll down on the Xbox site for Sea of Thieves. Yep. And there's the Sea of Thieves community.
Yep.
And you can join.
I can join the closed beta.
Join the closed beta. Well.
See, well, first you got to get your Sea of Thieves hand controller.
Is there a special controller?
Yeah, scroll up a little bit.
What is it? Oh, there it is. That's hysterical.
Right?
Yeah, I like it.
Looks like what is that, Monkey Island, Secret of Monkey Island?
Looks like it's been in my aquarium for the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Sea of Thieves is currently offline.
Too many people
playing. They must be running on AWS.
Yeah. Probably updating their Spectre Meltdown mitigation. So, yes, thanks exactly. to Intel, who's pulled it back.
Yeah.
So, anyway, if you want to, you can, and I'm gonna as soon as they come back online.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
So, app pick wise, yes. I guess you could try the Sea of Thieves limited beta, or whatever it's called, private beta. Last week we talked about Object Desktop 2018, how it includes Groupie. I just want to mention that again real quick, because now that Sets is definitely not going to be included, you could buy Object Desktop or just Groupie right now from Starduck and get this functionality in any version of Windows, any supported version of Windows. And it works better than Sets. It looks better too. It's kind of a better implementation of this functionality. So just kind of a reminder there. But my main pick, which was unsure as we went started recording today, but is now sure, is that I believe it's just Office 365 Personal and Home are in fact now generally available in the Microsoft Store. Microsoft has not announced this yet, but if you search for them, you'll be able to find them. And to be clear, these things were available to Windows 10S users on new computers. So if you bought a Surface laptop, you were able to get these suites in the store on that computer. Today, they're actually available to anybody. So the trick here is, if you already have Office installed, which you probably do, you're not going to see it if you go to the store. So you have to uninstall Office first. This is why I wasn't clear about this, because I wasn't seeing it on Windows 10 Pro, but apparently what you have to do is uninstall Office first, and then you'll be able to get it in the store.
Why would you want to do that?
that? Don't you already have it?
Well, I guess, I mean, obviously you still need an Office 365.
It's the same Office 365.
It's the same Office. Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, why? Yes, why would you want to do this?
Why would you uninstall a perfectly good copy of Office just to get the same
thing?
Because
it's a Microsoft Store version of Office. This question answers itself, Leo. I don't understand the question.
Does it update better automatically?
No, I think for technology enthusiasts who are excited about first-class apps in the store, this is something they just want to see. But, you know, going forward, for example, and in fact, I literally have been working on this entire time we've been working on the show, is, you know, on Windows, this is Windows 10S, to be clear, but... when I get a new computer going, this is the version I will install now, not the version from Office 365. Remember, in either case, what you're getting is the whole suite, right? So it kind of, you know, it's not like going to Office 365 and getting that version is going to help you just get the apps you want. You're still going to get them all this way. Although I told that long story about Windows 10S and Surface Laptop. The one bit I left out was that on one of the installs I did, I was trying to find Word Mobile, and I searched for Word Mobile, and what came up was Word 2016, and I actually was able to install just that app. So then I searched for Excel and PowerPoint, and they were there as well. And so there is the possibility, I don't know if that's available today, this kind of happened as we were recording the show, but as of just a couple of days ago, I was actually able to install individual apps from the store as well. Granted, that was on Windows 10S, so I don't know if that's generally available, but I did do it. They didn't activate, however, which is one of the many reasons I've blown this thing away. But anyway, this is just happening. It's kind of a fog of war thing, but if you are interested or have been wondering when this was going to happen, it's literally happening as we speak.
So does that mean... weren't these in preview just for Windows 10S laptop users? So that must mean it's out of preview for everybody, right?
Yep.
Or no?
Yep. Yeah, it's on Pro. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, the big question now is, well, what about the commercial versions of Office 365?
Right, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
That will come, and probably this year. But remember that, no matter how you acquire the app or the applications, you can sign into any account. And so what you're not going to get from this is, you know, Skype for Business and some Microsoft Teams, that kind of thing. But if you just want to use Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and Outlook, they're available. You can get the personal version, you can get the Office 365 home version. You can sign in with your Microsoft account, but you can sign in with your Office 365 commercial account too. Those will work fine.
Mm-hmm. Mary Jo Foley, I think we could do an enterprise pick this week.
Yeah, so you mentioned Spectre, Leo, and we didn't really talk about it earlier in the show, but things are not going well, to say the least. So I pointed in the show notes to Woody Leonard's column about this, which he calls "Let the BIOS UEFI firmware recall begin," and the problem is Intel. I guess you could say screwed up the firmware updates. And so once they posted a list of the buggy microcode families that they have released, and some people have already updated their PCs to, then HP and Dell and other companies started posting and saying, okay, wait, don't patch
it's
that BIOS.
Randomly.
So it's kind of scary to say this, but the best advice might be to just wait.
I think
right
so.
Now.
There's no exploit in the wild yet.
Right. There's no exploit in the wild, and everybody seems to be trying to figure out what's buggy and who's updated, and have you updated with something buggy, and now do you have to go in and basically re-update to get rid of the buggy code that you put on your PC? It's not good. It's not a good situation, and I don't have any like helpful tips or tricks for you about this. but just know that people are trying to fix the situation, and nobody should panic, I guess, at this point. But the best advice might just be do nothing right now.
What a mess! And Linus Torvalds is very angry.
Yeah, he had some choice words.
if Linus wants to be really angry, what he should probably do is use Linux.
Yeah, because it's not well patched either.
Nope.
I think that's part of his anger, though, is that they can't rely on fixes that Intel's pushing out.
Yeah.
Right.
He says,
I know, because last week after we talked about Steve Gibson's inspector tool, I'm like, should I go update my BIOS? And I'm glad I did not do that
now. As it turns out,
Yeah, on a related note, I did update. I mean, I did update this computer. I actually have a problem when this thing resets.
Yeah. My Lenovo is
back up.
My Lenovo.
I have to hold it down and it kind of takes a while. Yeah. But I noticed the HP laptop I used over the long weekend away. The inspector says, hey, your BIOS isn't up to date. And I go to the HP support tool and there is no BIOS update. And I think it's because of this Intel nonsense.
Yeah.
So.
So, yeah.
Fun.
You can back out of it with Steve's tool. I think that would... I don't know if it would back out of the BIOS updates.
Mm.
It's a mess. I mean, you know, if you're not rebooting, then you're fine. Yeah. You know, if you didn't get the boot loop, then, you know. And if you did, well... God bless you. God bless you.
Sorry. That's what you get for trusting Intel.
Yeah. Big mistake.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Yeah. Enterprise pick number two is a happier pick.
Yeah, it is. And it has nothing to do with Intel, which makes it even happier. So you know those always connected PCs that are coming using ARM chips? Mm-hmm. We've been talking about those on the show quite a bit. More and more details keep trickling out about this. And if you are either a developer or an IT pro or even a user who's thinking about, hey, maybe I want to try out some of those ARM-based PCs when they start shipping later this year, you should go to Microsoft Channel 9 because they did a community stand-up last week all about the always connected PC. And they had the they had a few special guests from the Windows team on there talking with Kevin Gallo. Totally worth watching. There's a lot of little nice tidbits in there about what kind of applications are going to work in emulation, what developers should do if they want to get their apps in the store ready for this. The whole back and forth about 64-bit really supported or is it 32-bit only? Lots of nice little tips, tricks, tidbits worth a watch. It's just under an hour. So just go to Microsoft Channel 9 and look for the special and check the question and answer stuff in the forum too. But check for Always Connected PC January 2018. It was from last week. Worth a watch.
And now,
that's awesome.
If you're 21 or older, it's time for a beer pick of the week.
Yes. So my beer pick of the week is from Baxter Brewing in Lewiston, Maine. Maine has a lot of really good brewers. Baxter is one of them. And I had this the other day. And here's how I described it in the show notes. Do you like porters?
Yes.
Do you like coconut?
Ooh.
Do you like almond?
Love it.
You can have it all.
What?
Baxter Brewing, Baxter Window Seat.
6%.
Tastes delicious. It's a porter with coconut and almond. It's just really straightforward, 6% simple.
6% is a little low, though. Is there anything on the higher side you could recommend?
Yeah. I feel like I've been making so many bourbon barrel and imperial picks lately that this is a nice little refresher.
What a great
little
looking palette. For something that has sugar on the rim of the glass.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. It Baxter Window Seat. It's just a very simple, straight up, nice porter with a touch of almond and coconut. Yum.
Can you mail order beer?
I just had this convo with somebody recently. So you're not supposed to.
You can mail order wine.
You can, although there, you know, like I was talking to somebody at FedEx about this. Yeah. It's state to state rules. Plus, you have to ensure like somebody who's 21 is receiving it technically. And it's people do it. People do beer trades through the mail all the time, but it's not. It's
but I
not,
couldn't go to Baxter and say I would like a case of this.
I think in the terms of interstate crime,
probably not.
This is probably on the low end of the scale.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Al Capone got started running liquor.
Yeah, there used to be a lot of services that did this.
Literally prohibited.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were services that were shipping beers. Like you could go in and have a checklist and get beers from all
There's
different states
a
and have
a fairly brisk business in wine by mail. I know we do a lot of it.
Yeah. I know.
I think we've got a sponsor coming along
that does this soon.
Oh, really? Nice. Yeah. Thanks.
So, I was in a beer of the month club, though. I used to get beer delivered via subcarrier.
It's just that, I guess I could go to Petaluma Market, but I don't think they'll have window seat. They have a lot of beers, but
they do.
Yeah, they're not going to have window seat. Yeah. Maybe they will. Gosh, I really want to try it. This sounds great.
It's very nice.
All right. Yeah. Mary Jo Foley, she is the expert in many things, including Microsoft and beer. Well, that's it, really. And cats. But not in distracting them. She's getting better,
Not
though.
Gaming.
Not
yet.
No. You'll find her work at allaboutmicrosoft.com. You'll find Mr. Therott at therott.com, therott.com, and his books at leanpub.com. And together, they join together every week to create a show called Windows Weekly, and it's a lovely thing. Every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC. If you want to stop by and watch live, it's at twit.tv/live. You can also chat with us as the show turns. Go to irc.twit.tv. And you'll also find Paul at First Ring Daily on YouTube, says Lawn Dog.
Yes, it's so good. Thank you for that additional promotion.
What is that? I don't even know.
That's our in-house daily short podcast thing.
Yeah. And you do a show called...
Actually, it's me and Brad. You would enjoy it.
Oh, Brad's
really
daily.
He's really there.
You're actually becoming a podcast maven here. You've got a bunch of them.
I feel like I think I'm done.
I feel like I started you on this journey.
You absolutely did. This is something I never would have done on my own.
OS2 Warp.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
We began the journey. So look for Paul on your favorite podcatcher. Look for Windows Weekly there, too. You can subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. And we will be back next week. Oh, we are doing our yearly survey. We do this once a year to get to know our audience a little bit better, both for our own purposes, to make shows that you like, or at least understand how you listen to them, and also for advertising purposes. We don't collect data in any other way about you. I'm proud of that. We don't do tracking or anything like that on our website. We don't attempt to gather information about you.
Why are you touching your nose when you say that?
That's a tell.
I'm touching mine because the cat is shedding.
No, we really don't. But this is once a year. We explicitly ask for a little bit of information about you, just so when advertisers say, well, are these people college educated? We could say, well, 4% are. 54% are in college. The rest are our hosts.
Nice.
Please, twit.tv/survey, if you would. It just takes about 4 minutes. We've made it much shorter. We had in years past far too many questions, we found. And so we've simplified it to just the facts, man. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.